You're listening to a podcast of spurious morality.
Hello and welcome to a podcast of spurious morality. I'm Johnston and with me this week I have Will. Hello, Will.
Hello again.
And we're carrying on through the Eighth Doctor adventures. So we did the first series not that long ago, found that we really enjoyed it. We talked quite a lot about how it's a very interesting and exciting period of Big Finish. You know, this was Big Finish on the radio. Lucy Miller was a great modern companion. We covered all of that. So the plan for today is basically we are going to go through the second series and sort of cover it episode by episode. And there's one that, even though we both listened to recently, we kind of can't really recall much about it. But that's a bridge we'll cross when we get to it. First of all, we start this series, and the first thing you will notice is the Eighth Doctor has a new theme tune now. And I have to admit, I prefer the other one. And I think Big Finish prefer the other one because they went back to it after not all that long. But for the next three series now, we do have this sort of very, well, it's very, very Delia Derbyshire-ish, isn't it? It's very like the original, but it's been sort of mashed together. It has plenty of sound effects thrown in. It's kind of a big, everything-y Doctor Who theme tune, but sort of very in the vein of the ones from the 60s, I guess. So do you have any sort of particular thoughts on the new theme that comes in with this series, Will?
I had a couple of thoughts, yeah. So you mentioned that Big Finish kind of stopped using it, actually went back to the old theme. Not just that, I just happened to be listening to recently the short trip, or the Rarity short trip. I think it was the Young Lions. And that uses the Mary Shelley theme. It's set during this time period. So it's set during the time when they would use the new theme, but it uses the Mary Shelley one. So they seem to have just completely abandoned it. I think the theme is all right, but to be honest with you, that's mainly just because I think the theme it's based on is all right. It basically takes the Tom Baker theme and like loops some areas and adds a bit of reverb and sound effects. And all in all, I think I would have preferred if they'd just kept the David Arnold theme. I think that's a really strong theme. I think maybe the reason they changed it is because, you know, that version of the theme is very iconic and they knew that this would probably be going out on the radio. I don't think we've got a joint production with the BBC anymore, but still, this used to always be on the radio. And so the feeling may have been, if we show a version of the theme that people know, we might be more likely to get people to listen, perhaps. That's my only thoughts on why they did it. But yes, I would personally have just preferred if they'd have kept using the theme they were using, which they did indeed go back to.
So it's, yeah, I'll agree with you. It is certainly more, I suppose, radio friendly is the term, isn't it? It is something that no one can mistake. Like you listen to that and you go, oh yeah, that's the Doctor Who theme. The David Arnold one, I mean, I'm a big fan of it. I'm really glad they went back to it. I'm really glad it's still used today. The David Arnold theme, I guess it's possible to have it on in the background and not immediately realise that it's Doctor Who. You'd have to really not be listening, but yeah, I can follow that logic. So new theme tune aside, our first episode is Dead London. I like this. I think it kind of repositions the series a little bit. It's kind of saying, yeah, we did the storyline-y thing last time. We did the Daleks and the Cybermen-y thing last time. Let's just have some fun adventures. And this is very much a fun adventure. I think it's a great season opener. I guess the thing you have to compare it to mainly, because obviously Big Finish is really trying to ape New Who at this point. The logical thing to compare it to is sort of New Earth or Smith and Jones or something like that. And I think it stands up quite well. Sort of, you've got an interesting idea, an interesting villain. We dive straight in. We've not got any of the sort of TARDIS landing, ooh, where are we, Doctor? It's straight into the action. That sort of farcical court scene, and Lucy and the Doctor are separated, and sort of the episode works to bring them together, and sort of the mystery unfolds that way by reconnecting these characters. It's a Pat Mills one. I like Pat Mills doing Big Finish because you really get the feel that Pat Mills is a comic book writer. I mean, Pat Mills is a comic book writer. And you get that, and it does very much feel like a comic book on audio. And I'm okay with that. I think Big Finish produce comic book-like material very, very well. And, you know, they have done comic adaptations for both Doctor Who and The Avengers, and it's worked out rather well. So, yeah, I thought Pat Mills was a really interesting writer to bring in on this series, and I think we get this sort of, even though it's on audio, very visually striking story, and I find it very easy to picture what's going on with this one. So what about you? Talk to us about Dead London.
Yes, Dead London. And it was actually just as you said it that I made the connection that Pat Mills, the writer of this, was the comic book writer. This series as a whole, as you said, has this feeling of just we've done the introductions and we're going to just have a collection of fun adventures, which is something I quite like, is that sort of middle period where they're just sort of traveling around is quite good. If there's we previously discussed the Valerie Lockwood stuff, and I really loved that, but I could have had like one or two extra stories that were just like fun adventures before they went back to, you know, all of the big storyline stuff they were doing.
And all the misery.
All the misery. I think basically early on they realised how good Zafir Engar was at crying, and that was it. But I like that this series we get a lot of these fun adventures, and I think Dead London is one of them. I think what you said about it being visual, I think that's very true. I think it's very easy to visualise. I thought, and apologies if I end up mispronouncing, Rupert Van Sittart does very well here, because I think he plays at least six characters all under the guise of this larger figure, obviously. But I think he does a very good job. And if there's one thing I noticed on re-listen, because I had previously heard this a few years ago, I found it to be a little bit more rushed. So that's one thing. There were a couple of moments where it maybe could have had a bit more time to breathe. But overall, I think enjoyable. And I like this sort of this world that's created. It's a bit War Games-y in the sense of, not necessarily tonally, but you've got this sort of this world made up of these different time zones, which is just a great idea. And I think quite amusingly at the end, because obviously in the War Games, the Second Doctor gives up his life to try and return these people to where they came from. And in this one, we've got people being taken and being placed into this sort of hodgepodge London, and the Eighth Doctor just leaves. He's not doing that again. They can sort that out themselves. Overall, I think an enjoyable start to the season. And yes, I would say, actually, as you mentioned, I do actually quite like that this series just gets straight into it. We don't have an, you know, interior TARDIS day scene at the beginning or anything. It just goes dive straight in, which I think serves it quite well.
I think what you say about the pacing is quite interesting. Yeah, it's a very, very quick story. It barely stops for breath at any point. But again, I'm putting that down to the fact that this is written by somebody whose background is comic books. It does have that sort of constant breakneck pace that a comic does. So, Yeah, I'm putting this one down as a winner. Like I've said on this podcast before, I'm not a big, particularly big comic reader. I'm not a massive fan of the format, I guess. But like as a way of storytelling, I think that does translate well to audio. And I do listen to a lot of audio adaptations of comics. Like there's a company called Graphic Audio who do things that are, they do Marvel comics and they do DC. They've done Batmans and things like that. I think they're really good. But that's a sidestep for another time, probably a coffee bar time. Let's get back to Doctor Who. That sounds
like a shout. I've also read some of the old 60s TV comics, and that's certainly something to discuss at some point. They're a bit different to the ADAs, but yeah.
Yes, I can imagine that. Yes, I think we're just sort of accidentally coming up with new podcast episodes as we do this, aren't we?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we'll never stop.
Well, let's talk about Max Warp, because I love Max Warp. I think Max Warp's brilliant. The biggest problem now with Max Warp is we no longer have Top Gear in the form that it was at the time. But if you're watching Top Gear in sort of 2008, this series, I think.
Yeah.
Max Warp is just the perfect parody of what was going on. Like, absolutely spot on. It's so much fun. Top Gear does Agatha Christie in space. Only Doctor Who could pull that off, couldn't it? We've got a wonderful guest cast in this one as well. We've got Tim Brooke Taylor, and he was, you know, just great in absolutely everything. But yeah, this is kind of the fun one. There is sort of a very serious murdery plot going on, as I've said. But that's not the main sort of point of this one. The main point of this one is it's parodying Top Gear and it's having fun doing it. Like, you know, what are the characters called? Is it Jeffrey Vantage, O'Reilly and Timbo the Ferret or something like that? And you just sort of think, spot on. Absolutely great. I have so much fun with this one. I keep going back to it, because it's a bit of a guilty pleasure. Like I was well into sort of the Clarkson, Hammond and May Top Gear at the time. And I remember first hearing this one and just thinking, oh, they've got it so right. They've got it spot on. The idea that sort of the Clarkson type character would be furious at being given a female co-host, for example, fairly certain that that's probably been a debate or a discussion in a production office at some point that's gone exactly the way it did here. Lucy gets to have fun in this one. The Doctor goes into full detective mode. And yeah, it's just fun. Like if Dead London was fun, but Dead London did have a very serious sort of tone to it, that sort of, I guess, a serious comic book tone, whereas this is just sort of all-out parody, which isn't something Doctor Who does very often, but when it does do it, it tends to hit the mark, I think. So, yeah, talk to us about Max Warp.
Yeah, so as you've already really alluded to, Max Warp is basically like the most 2008 thing ever. I also was watching Top Gear around that time, and I think it really does skewer it quite well, and I think there's lots of these little in-jokes and things that are quite fun. And not only actually to Top Gear, but also you've got this tannoy going on throughout that has a bunch of fun little Easter eggs, which I think it's a nice little touch, I think. And overall, I think you've said a lot of the stuff that I would have said. I think it's just a really enjoyable murder mystery, and I think the characters are captured really well. You've mentioned some of the cast. I think we also get, don't we? In this one, we get Graham Garden, who we will be hearing from again in a different role, but also does a great job here. And overall,
I'm flipping it, I got the wrong "I'm sorry, I haven't a clue" cast member. I did mean Graham Garden and not Tim Brooke Taylor.
I think is Tim Brooke Taylor also in it?
I don't think so. No, Tim Brooke Taylor's definitely one of these though. Just not this one. Right, we're looking out for Tim Brooke Taylor. I'm sure he's going to show up at some point.
Yeah, Graham Garden, he does do a good Clarkson, and I think I only made a couple of notes while I was listening to these, and they're not particularly useful, but I did note there's a bit at the beginning where the doctor and Lucy, after the murder has happened, the doctor just says these are our credentials, with no way of having been able to pick any up, which I think is a fun way of, I think basically he just flashes them the psychic paper, but they couldn't say so. You get a couple of little things like that, because obviously this is supposed to be quite New Who adjacent, but they didn't have the rights to it yet. That was one little observation that I picked up on. So yeah, I think really I'd be echoing a lot of the things that you'd have said already about Maxwell. Just a fun story. Oh, and I suppose, yeah, the one other thing I noticed is one topical reference in particular that people might not get if they're coming back to it now is that it quite heavily references Richard Hammond's crash from 2007, his near fatal crash, because obviously in this case it appears to be fatal and then ends up not being so. Which I suppose if you're coming in now, you may not realise that it's a reference to that. But yeah, I do enjoy this one, and I think it's quite a nice time capsule of when this series came out.
I think I've got this one on vinyl as well. This one got a vinyl release, didn't it?
Yeah,
Seem to remember.
it's the only one from this series that did, I think. They it was a few, wasn't it? It was like a couple of main ranges and this and some of the Ninth Doctor adventures, and that was kind
There's
of
a
it,
few
I think.
Fourth Doctor. There's a few Fourth Doctor ones as
Oh
well.
yeah, and I think Dalek Universe as well. I think
Yes. Yes, I do. I've got the Ninth Doctor, first two series of Ninth Doctor. I've got Dalek Universe. But yeah, Eighth Doctor's fairly underrepresented on vinyl. Oh, Chimes of Midnight. I've got Chimes of Midnight.
Yeah,
That got a
I thought
very
yeah, Chimes had
limited
one. Yeah,
release.
I think it was the first one they did with the Chimes and Spare Parts, I think. But we're
Yes.
digressing again.
We are. But, notes, big finish on vinyl as a podcast episode. Should actually start writing these down. Should we have a look at Brave New Town then?
We should, I think, yes.
Because it is the next one in the series, so, would be the logical thing to do. Okay, this one's good. Now, when I first heard this one, I had absolutely no idea about the sort of monster reveal, with it being Autons. It's an Auton story. So it genuinely sort of, back in 2008, it genuinely kind of got me, like surprised me a bit, like, oh, nice. But it's a really good kind of Auton story. It's not an out and out invasion and, oh, we have to be careful of plastic and all that kind of thing. It's kind of like, what if a load of Autons are dumped in the desert and kind of have to function as a society with the army closing in, I guess. It's got a really good central mystery, and it does take its time to explore that mystery. It doesn't just drop everyone's an Auton at you within the first few minutes, which other episodes might. So it's not called like the Village of the Autons or anything like that. It is very much sort of kept back. I don't think it's even mentioned in the blurb or anything like that. So, I don't know, I find it quite interesting because obviously Autons had featured in Rose. They were a monster that are familiar to New Who fans, people who came on board at New Who, people whose generation was New Who, take your pick. And they sort of chose not to go wild on advertising that, which I think's it's a great little move. I still don't think we get enough of Autons at Big Finish. Like they can't be difficult to do on audio, surely, like the concept of plastic being the bad guy. But I think every time they have been used, they've been used quite effectively. But this is perhaps the most effective one. Not an awful lot for Lucy to do in this one. I have to admit, I mean, we've not really talked about Lucy yet. We were covering Lucy every episode in the first series, and she does seem to have settled a little bit more into the, I don't want to say generic, because she's not a generic companion, she's a very unique character, but she's sort of settled into that more generic companion role, of sort of asking questions and occasionally getting into trouble. Not necessarily a massive criticism, just we're not as Lucy focused this time round, which I do wonder if that was sort of a deliberate creative decision. But yeah, it's a good one. Adrian Dunbar's in this one. So I think, you know, I think last time we said, oh, the sort of the big casts dry up, don't they, in the second series? But no, they don't. We've named somebody every time now. But yeah, Adrian Dunbar, who was, well, was Adrian Dunbar ever down to be the Doctor? Like in the 80s, was he one of the people that was considered for replacing McCoy, or have I made that up?
It might have been. I'm not sure. It's not a name that I know.
Replacing Colin Baker, even.
Doctor. Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah.
Was he one of the
I might
ones
have entirely
that...
made that up.
Yeah.
Yeah, not sure now. Someone's going to tweet me going, no, you're talking absolute rubbish, Johnston. But
that's good. They've got to keep
Adrian,
us honest.
Yeah, Adrian Dunbar, like, needs to be in Doctor Who more. I'm all for that. So, yeah, go on, talk to us about Brave New Town.
Yeah, so going in, I had high hopes for it because, as I mentioned last time, my favourite episode from the previous series was Immortal Beloved, and this is by Jonathan Clements as well. It's the same writer. And yeah, I did really like this. I'm trying to wrap my brains about when I first heard this a couple of years ago now. Did I know the Autons were in it or not? And I can't remember whether that had been spoiled for me. Because as you say, there's nothing to suggest it anywhere. And I think one thing I really like about this one is the reveal of the Autons, because obviously we get little clues, but the reveal is the gun sound effect. We hear it like through a door, and I think that's just such. It, obviously, it's a little bit fanish, but it's I think such a great way of introducing them, because obviously one thing you mentioned, because I don't think the Autons get featured very often in Big Finish, but they have their own sort of sound suite, which means that you'd think that they would be shown more often. Not only that you know rocket sound effect, but also the when their hand falls and reveals the gun, that's its own little noise as well, which we also get in this. And I thought that particular reveal was done very nicely. Yeah, overall, just a very enjoyable story. The way that the mystery sort of pans out, where we start with this community that seems to be living the same day over and over again in this English village, but then it turns out the village isn't in England and the people aren't people. Yeah, it's. I think it all follows along very nicely and wraps up nicely as well. I hadn't really thought about the Lucy thing until you mentioned it. I suppose it is true, perhaps, that maybe with Lucy being in more of a established companion role, that she gets less to do. Certainly in this one, the characters that we only get for this episode get quite a lot to do in this one, so I suppose that she would have to take a back seat. There are a couple of episodes coming up where Sheridan Smith does get to shine a bit, so we'll be able to discuss them then. But yes, overall, just yeah, like this very much, and would agree with you that we should see more Autons. I haven't heard that Torchwood one they did. Is that a couple of years ago now? Double? Because I know that's
Double. Yeah,
that's an Auton story. I'll have to give that a listen.
I'm a big fan of Double, but it took me a couple of listens to sort of fully appreciate what it was doing. But as soon as I did get it, I was like, oh, yeah, this is actually really, really good. And it's kind of disappointing we've not had any kind of follow-up to it. Like, I think they've said they want to, but I think it's a case of getting certain people in certain places at certain times, as many of these things are. Next one is the one that honestly I've just got nothing on. Skull of Sobek. Like I don't remember anything about it. Like I know it's a Mark Platt script. I know that it sort of involves an ancient race of warlike crocodiles, but that's basically all I've got. Like I say, I've listened to it recently. I think it's just one of those that you can listen to in the moment and it just sort of then washes over you, which is fine. But I really can't go into specifics like how big Lucy's role is in it or anything like that. It's a bit of an odd one. Like Mark Platt generally rights to, you know, a certain quality of Doctor Who, like a good quality. So, and I don't sort of have any thoughts about disliking this one, but I could also not really point out the bits I do like. What about you? Have you got the same sort of brain fog about it as I have? Or
I have got a little bit of fog about it as well, similar to you. There are a few things I remember. I remember that at one point a crocodile bites a guy's hand off and then gives it back to him. That's quite metal. That was always something about this series, actually, is that it kind of followed the New Who format, but would be just a touch, slight bit more sort of violent or dark or things like that. And that's certainly an example of it that you see. And obviously helped by the fact that there's no visual element. You definitely couldn't get something like that on the TV show. There were a couple of other bits. I like the sort of the central idea of the world, in that people would find this sort of perfect landscape of these, you know, absolutely identical sand dunes and decide to build a temple to imperfection on it, seemingly just to spite the world. It's quite a nice idea. And there's a nice bit, because this whole thing is essentially this, you know, generation spanning war between a father and a son. And I think there's quite a nice bit towards the end when Lucy and the Doctor are being forced to fight, and this father and son, who apparently hate each other, are mortal enemies and things, start just buddy up and start having a chat while their champions fight. And I think it does sort of play to this idea of, like, you know, the generals in war who, you know, are actually, you know, big mates and things like that, and versus the ones who are actually dying and things like that. But overall, I struggle to remember that much about the Skull of Sobek. And certainly that was the case coming re-listening to it. When I started this re-listen, there were various episodes where I knew stuff about it, whereas Skull of Sobek, I didn't remember any of this. And then even having listened to it a couple of weeks ago, I've only got bits and pieces. So sadly, I just don't think this one has stuck with me that much.
I'm fairly certain I've heard everything in this series at least 5 times. And yeah, it just, I don't know why, I just can't get this one to stick in my head, I guess. I think it's possibly due to just the fact that this is a really high quality series. Like, Dead London's really memorable, and Max Warp's incredibly sort of funny and really memorable, and Brave New Town has got the Auton twist and is really memorable. And, you know, we're going to go on to Grand Theft Cosmos next, which again has some wonderful moments. Zygon Who Fell to Earth is very significant in the sort of ongoing storyline. And then you've got the big two-part finale. Like, this is kind of the one that doesn't do anything big and wild and exceptional. It just sort of turns up, is a Doctor Who story, and, you know, does a pretty good job of it. That's kind of where I'm leaving that one, I'm afraid. But the next one is Grand Theft Cosmos, and I do like this one a bit. We're sticking with the sort of quite light-hearted comedy tone that we've had in quite a few episodes up till now. In fact, Skull of Sobek kind of drops that tone as well, which I guess is another reason it's not entirely as memorable. I don't know. Grand Theft Cosmos is great. I think the important part is it bringing back the headhunter from the first series. Like, Katarina Olsen hasn't been away. I think she's still been a different character in every episode somehow, but she's back as the headhunter in this one. And we've got Karen as well, that she kind of picked up from the quote-unquote office back in Human Resources. And it's just a bit of a sort of a heisty caper, bit of a comedy. You know, I think Lucy kind of adopting the pseudonym Tara Palmer Tomkinson was very funny in 2008. You know, sort of a very well-known figure on TV at the time and that kind of thing. And it's just little moments like that that kind of do make it. This is a good one for Lucy. It feels like Lucy's back in this one. It feels like this is the first one of the series where Lucy is a sort of a relatively significant part of it. But then again, it's tying back to the very Lucy-centric human resources. And you know, there was the whole thing about Lucy and Karen and them being swapped out and all this kind of thing. It's another good cast. It's Christopher Benjamin. It's Colin Spall. Not the biggest names that have been in this series, but big names to any Doctor Who fans out there, I guess. They both sort of had some pretty iconic appearances. Yeah, this one's back to being fun. It's kind of, it's one that maybe is slightly interchangeable with Max Warp. They do slightly different things, but they're sort of fairly level on the grounds of tone and that kind of thing. But this one just has, it's not exactly pushing forward any storylines, but it's kind of reminding you that the Headhunter is still about and is still going to be significant. And obviously, well, maybe you don't know this because you've not heard it, have you? But in the third series, she does become slightly more important again in terms of what's going on. So yeah, talk to us about Grand Theft Cosmos.
Okay, so we're going to get into like a 1-2 punch here of like really great Who stories, I think. I did wonder about this because I know last time we talked about our favourite one at the start, and I sort of debated on it a bit, and I think it would be this one. I tried not to use the word fun so much this time because I think I used it loads in the Series 1 reviews, but this is so much fun. This is just a great comedy, very fast sort of run around caper, and I really enjoyed my time with it. Just when you realize the setup that it's going to be about, you know, these two separate groups, the Doctor's group and the Headhunter's group, trying to out heist each other, it's just such a great idea. I think it's the plot of one of the Oceans films. Is it Oceans 12, maybe? I don't know, that might be where it's where it comes from. But I think there's just, it's just quite a joyful episode. I enjoyed the Headhunter being back. I like the Headhunter as a character, and I think Katarina Olsen does very well. And I think I liked Karen in this as well, having her back. And it will be interesting, actually, to see where that goes in Series 3, because obviously they're still around after this. I did notice that Katarina Olsen is in every episode of this series, which I didn't know if it was like a Susan Twist thing or something like that, or if it was just that she's a very good, you know, very dependable voice actor. I don't know, but yeah, that was an odd thing, because I was kind of expecting, you know, to get to Vengeance of Morbius and we'll suddenly discover, you know, this huge twist. Maybe that's to come. As I say, I haven't heard Series 3. But yeah, just a really enjoyable, funny story that just basically goes 60 miles an hour the whole way. Overall, don't have that much more to say about it. But probably my favourite of the series.
I've not mentioned my favourite of the series yet because we've not got to it yet. And well, actually, quite sort of unimaginatively, it's the finale. I really, really like the finale two-parter. But we'll cross that bridge when we reach it. The next one we have is also a very good story, actually. It's The Zygon Who Fell to Earth. So we're not hiding the monster mystery here at all. It's Zygons, it's in the title, they're on the cover, and they appear within the first few minutes of the story. And there's a very real Zygon threat. You kind of have the sort of standard Zygon story floating underneath this one. You know, they're displaced and they want a home. The big twist on it is, obviously, that one of the Zygons has gone off to basically marry Antipat, and they run a hotel together. It's a very, very Paul Mars setup, isn't it? So yes, you've got a Zygon running a hotel with Antipat, and you've got all the other Zygons going, we want our Zygon friend back, and we need to basically invade this place. And leader Zygon's not too keen on that because he's sort of married to a human. This is the one with Tim Brooke Taylor in. I knew he popped up. Yes.
Mims, Tim Brooke Taylor. Yes.
Yes, Tim Brooke Taylor is in this one. I knew Tim Brooke Taylor was in this series, and therefore I'm forgiven for mixing up my goodies and my classic. I'm sorry, I haven't included panelists. So yeah, it's a shame they didn't get Bill Oddie in this series as well. Then we'd have sort of got the goody hat trick.
They should have just re-aired Pirates.
Yeah, they should have done, or remade it. Got Paul McGann and Sheridan Smith singing instead. Now there's an absolute crime. Jacqueline Rayner didn't write for the Eighth Doctor Adventures. That's unforgivable.
That is actually, yeah, that's yeah. A bit of a surprise. I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah.
Yeah, like they've got most other absolutely fantastic, iconic Big Finish writers in here. Where is my Jack Rayner? But anyway, moving back to the story, it's also got Stephen Pacey in it, you know, one for Blake's Seven fans and one for fans of audiobooks, actually, because he's read a lot of them. He's quite a prolific audiobook reader now. I have a lot of fun with this one. It is very serious. It sort of takes a twist, has quite a dark ending, and sort of sows the seeds for the Doctor and Lucy falling out, which is, you know, kind of important moving down the line a bit. But it's sort of a very significant story in this series. And I think, you know, the Eighth Doctor, we get to see a bit of the darker side of the Eighth Doctor. Like, obviously, as the Eighth Doctor heads towards the Time War, his character gets darker and darker and darker. And, you know, we see it in Dark Eyes and Doom Coalition and all of that. But yeah, maybe the Doctor not being honest with Lucy here is arguably the first sign of our slightly darker Eighth Doctor starting to creep in. Bear in mind, it's not too far in the future after this that he's all leather jackets and shorter hair and less tiggery. But yeah, it's an important story in the run. It's a very, very good story. It picks up some stuff left behind in Horror of Glam Rock, and it sets up far, far more. Like I say, the sort of biggest twist in it is that it does have quite a dark ending. It never sets it up as a particularly light story, never sets itself up as a particularly light story, but it definitely takes a dark turn towards the end. Yeah, I enjoy this one. What do you think?
No, I agree. I think this is a good one. I think, in fact, it was probably when I was deciding what's my favourite, it was between this and Grand Theft Cosmos. I like in this one that it's just a big collection of twists, really. You know, we get that, you know, Antipat's married to Zygon, and then she knows that she married to Zygon, and then Antipat dies, which is obviously, you know, the big one there, which is if there was one thing you could be pretty sure of, it would be that that she'd make it through, given that we know that she's around later. But actually, no, Paul Mars does a big twist on us, and Antipat's been a Zygon throughout all of Lucy's life, basically. It's as you mentioned, there's some nice emotional stuff in this. There is also some humour, especially around the Zygons themselves. There are some quite funny scenes there. I didn't mention, you briefly mentioned that Sheridan Smith was very good in the last episode. I think she also gets some funny stuff to do here when she's very obviously been taken over by is actually a Zygon duplicate. I guess at the time, it does show off her comedy chops, because at the time Sheridan Smith probably would have been known as a comedy actor because of her sitcom work and things like that. Whereas now, obviously, she's done loads of drama stuff and everything like that. I think it hits a lot of great emotional beats, this one, and is a really nice follow-up sort of second act in this sort of anti-Pat story. Quite amusing at the beginning, because obviously in Horror of Glam Rock, Lucy sort of puts her foot in it and says that anti-Pat is like nothing without really thinking about it. And then in this one, literally in like the first 5 minutes, she does it again. And says like, oh no, you don't have any of this in the future. It's quite a funny sort of callback. So yeah, be interesting, because I have heard series four, but not series three, but actually I haven't heard the first two episodes of series four. So I haven't heard Death in Blackpool. And I am interested in hearing that sort of third part, I guess, to this anti-pat stuff, unless there's another anti-pat one in the middle that I don't that I didn't know about. Although I note that I didn't know until I was sort of looking over them for this that Paul Mars didn't write all three. The third one, I think, is Alan Barnes. So that'd be a bit of an interesting thing to see where that gets taken. But yeah, good story. One of my favourites so far from these first two series.
Yeah, it has to be said. I mean, I won't go into it too much because, you know, we're going to get to it in this, in what we're doing. But Death in Blackpool's definitely a bit of a gear shift with the anti-pat stuff. It sort of changes things up quite a lot. It's definitely not a sort of a Paul Mars setup. It's a very, very different kind of story and a very different situation that Lucy and anti-pat are put in. But you've not heard it, have you, Death in Blackpool, so well?
No, so
I'll
it's
shut up.
Series 3, Death in Blackpool and Situation Vacant are the only ones that I haven't heard. I was saying it's just, I guess, a bit of an odd one, but that's just what happened. The radio happened to be airing Nevermore when I started, so that was where I jumped in.
Yeah, I think like sort of it's going to be interesting going through the third series with you because it takes another sort of tonal gear shift again. I think all four series of this have a very, very unique identity, actually. I think this is probably the one with the least of an identity. Like we said at the start, this is just let's get on with it and have some fun adventures. But that all kind of comes crashing down in what we've got to discuss next, which is the two-part finale. It's Sisters of the Flame and The Vengeance of Morbius. As I said before, I'm a huge, huge fan of this. Like, we start off with a lost and confused and imprisoned Lucy who just doesn't trust anyone around her, doesn't know what's going on. Something has happened. And I absolutely love the way this works. It just sort of very slowly pieces together, very slowly builds up a world around us, and then sends it all to hell. It's sort of delightfully creepy stuff, and it works really well, sort of having the Doctor absent for a fair chunk of it. He's not absent too much, but he's definitely absent for a fair chunk of it. Sheridan Smith gets to shine, so for any sort of lack of Lucy so far this series, the fact that she's been not necessarily sidelined a couple of times, but the fact that she's not had tons and tons to do, that all goes away here because particularly the first part, Sisters of the Flame, is all about her. And you just sort of get little hints about what's going on. It's really, really cleverly built up and it's a really intense listen. Again, particularly the first part, Sisters of the Flame. I genuinely think this is sort of Nick Briggs at his writing best. I think this is up there with sort of Robophobia is another favourite of mine and that kind of thing. But yeah, there's a real sense of sort of claustrophobia and fear, and you feel like you're sharing Lucy's sort of confusion. My only real problem with it is that she doesn't trust Alexander Siddig's character, and he's obviously just lovely from the start. Like the idea of just like a big centipede cop in space, I love it. So yeah, I like this. It takes its time, it unfolds, it does kind of go into big epic all hell breaks loose mode. It does go big epic finale, but it takes its time to get there. In fact, I don't think it's until, is it the latter third of Vengeance of Morbius that it really kind of goes into big epic universe shattering mode? It sort of takes a while to get there because there's
it
a far
about the last 15 minutes or so, yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's because there's just a far more interesting story to be told about Lucy finding out what's going on and sort of us unraveling the mystery through her eyes. You know, eventually we do bring in Straxus, he comes back, and we sort of spend a bit of time on Gallifrey and watching the universe fall to pieces and that kind of thing, but it just takes a while to get there. Samuel West is a great Morbius. I'm so glad it took him a while, but I'm so glad they brought him back last year for a couple of pretty good releases. We got the Morbius Dark Gallifrey, which is still my favourite Dark Gallifrey so far, and we got Morbius the Mighty, which is probably my favourite War Doctor set so far. So there's something to be done with Morbius. I still think there's something to be done with Morbius. He's a very interesting character. And this does serve as a good sequel to Brain of Morbius, but it definitely does its own thing. It's a totally different kind of story. And I think it is the kind of story that the character of Morbius deserved. He's a Time Lord that you can perhaps do things with that you can't with other Time Lords. And, you know, you've got the whole sort of resurrection aspect to play with. You've got the fact that he's arguably the most successful Time Lord villain there's ever been and various other things like that. So, yeah, I like the slow burn. I like the fact that eventually all hell breaks loose. I like the fact that the series basically ends on the Doctor is dead and the Headhunter turns up to finish Lucy off as well. Like, flipping heck, what an end of series cliffhanger. I'm a huge fan of this. What about you, Will?
Yes, well, first off, that's another Spodcast episode for you there, The Best of Briggs. I think you'd have to throw Creatures of Beauty into there. And in fact, there's another Briggs story coming in eventually in here that I remember really enjoying first time round, and hopefully Will on the re-listen as well. But anyway, back to this finale. I think we get a suitably epic finale here from Briggs. And I do like sort of aspects of the build, certainly. I like Rosto, as you mentioned. I think Alexander Siddig, that's another name, and I think he does a great job. And I love the little sort of centipede-y sound effects we get. Big Finish are always very good with their sound effects, and I think it works very well here. I like that that technically the story could have required just any Time Lord really to work, other than the Doctor. But I like that they've brought Straxus back. I like that they have this sort of this through line, so obviously with Straxus having appeared in Series 1, and I think will appear in further Eighth Doctor stuff as well. And I like that they chose to have that line through. You mentioned Samuel West. That was one that I was going to mention as well. I think he does a really great job here in the finale. I really liked him as Morbius. And I knew that Morbius had come back. Obviously, he was quite heavily advertised, but I haven't heard those box sets yet. So I am quite happy to hear that they did get him back. So I wasn't sure if they'd recast or not. I'm pleased to hear that they have, apparently, that it is Samuel West, because I think even though Morbius doesn't actually show up until a fair way through this story, he does leave an impression. I think it's a great performance. I like some of the build, but I think maybe for me it builds a little bit too long. Like this idea of when they, you know, the Doctor travels to defeat Morbius, and then it turns out that he's the TARDIS has skipped forward a few years and Morbius has taken over the universe, well, the galaxy and things like that. I would have liked to have spent a bit more time there. I feel like I run the risk of doing the thing of reviewing the story for something that it isn't, but I would have liked just a little bit, especially one beat that I think I would have liked expanded on was Rosto, where Rosto gets taken over, you know, brainwashed, and then beats that brainwashing, and then, you know, dies protecting Lucy. But that's done all very quickly, one after the other, and I would like that expanded a little bit. But overall, I think this is an enjoyable finale that gets to a lot of the things that you would want a finale to do. There's a great emotional moment at the end from Sheridan Smith. As you say, she gets a lot to do in this story particularly, and that bit at the end where she's sort of railing against Straxus after the Doctor has died is really well done, and a really good, strong moment, I think, to end the series on. And then we get that post-credit scene as well, which just brings your intrigue into what exactly they're going to do with Series 3, having seemingly killed off both of their leads. But I think this wraps, you know, this collection of adventures up quite nicely, and also leads on into the next set. So yeah, I think overall a pretty successful story.
Yeah, it goes big. maybe it does take a little bit too long to go big. Like I think that's fair. Like, I love the build up. I don't think the story is actually about all the stuff Morbius gets up to at the end. It's about Lucy sort of getting lost in this bit of the universe that's happening. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of this. I really do think it serves as an excellent finale. And when you consider that it might not even be the best finale of these four series of Eighth Doctor adventures, I think that's testament to like how good some of this stuff is. So that's been a good series. That's been good. Like I know the first series is great. I know the fourth series is great. And I think received fan wisdom is that series one and four of the Eighth Doctor adventures are best. But I really enjoy this run. I think there's some great stuff here. Like Dead London's a lot of fun. Max Warp's a lot of fun. Brave New Town's interesting. Grand Theft Cosmos is great. Zygon Who Fell to Earth sort of has some pretty heavy emotional stuff in. And this finale's, you know, huge. It really does make a fantastic Doctor Who finale. I genuinely think it's a contender for best as well. I think that sort of that accepted fan wisdom that series one and four of this are the best might not be true. I've got a soft spot for this one, and I'm a big fan of it. So yeah, that's been a good run. Any sort of final thoughts you want to add on this series at all?
I think really just sort of summing up, as I said at the beginning, I just like this group of stories. I like this dynamic that they've built up at this point through this collection of stories. I think I might have said this either the last time or in another one of these, where similar to like the Seventh and Ace and Hex and Six and Evelyn or Eleven and Valerie and things like this, I just like spending time with these characters, and I think these eight stories are a great way to spend time with these characters, featuring some really great stuff. As I said, of the two series we've heard so far in this particular listen through, I'd say Grand Theft Cosmos and Zygon Who Fell to Earth so far would be at the top for me. So yeah, a very successful series, and the next one's going to be very interesting because I haven't heard it before. So that's going to be quite fun to get into.
Again, it's a very different series with its own tone. It kind of has a very solid storyline that doesn't particularly run straight through it, but it does. It is there throughout the series. But it's also got like other little bits. Like I think the way they resolve the cliffhanger from the end of this is very clever, and not necessarily the end, like the resolution you'd expect. So yeah, I do hope you enjoy it. As soon as you have got it listened to, we'll make a Spodcast episode about it. Why not?
Excellent.
But in the meantime, I reckon that's all we've got time for, so we will leave it there. So thank you very much for joining me again to talk about the Eighth Doctor, Will.
It was a pleasure.
He's definitely a favourite podcast subject, the Eighth Doctor. Like, I guess, yeah. You know, we do talk a lot about Big Finish, and he was Big Finish's current Doctor for a long, long time. And in some ways still feels like he is Big Finish's current Doctor. Yeah, I have a lot of fun with the Eighth Doctor, and I especially have a lot of fun with these four series of Eighth Doctor adventures. So yeah, we will leave it there, and we'll be back for more Spodcasting very soon. Goodbye now.
Ta-ra.